Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Jocelyn Floyd of the Thomas More Society. We're going to get her reaction to the recent Supreme Court decision striking down a Texas law related to abortion. Jocelyn, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so the Supreme Court last week, this is being pre-recorded, of course, decided that a Texas law was unconstitutional. Tell us exactly what the law said and why did they come to that conclusion?
The law that Texas adopted was to bring the standards for abortion providers up to the same medical standards that other comparable medical clinics are required to meet. So these were things including requiring the doctors to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the clinic, requiring certain fire safety codes to be met, hallways wide enough for gurneys to come through, working elevators. In case of emergency, these requirements are there so that the paramedics can get in and quickly and safely treat the injured patient, in this case always a woman, or transport them to the hospital. The court decided that it was unconstitutional because the majority said this violates the standard that they set up in 1992 in a case called the undue burden test. And there they
Was that part of the Casey decision?
Yes. The decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992 was where the undue burden test was created. And that's where they said that the state has a legitimate interest in regulating medicine and medical providers, and they are allowed to impose requirements on medical providers so long as those requirements don't cause an undue burden on a woman seeking an abortion. So then the question in this case was, what does undue burden mean? What does this test actually mean when you're applying it to a specific law such as the one that Texas adopted?
Okay, and I assume you oppose the Supreme Court's decision.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that's an understatement.
They essentially rewrote the undue burden test. They took it far beyond what anything in Casey even contemplated.
Well, would it be fair to say that, in a sense, access to abortion is more important than even safety for women seeking abortions?
That's our point, and that's our argument, that back in 1973, when Roe versus Wade was first decided, a lot of the rhetoric around the case was that they needed to ensure that there was safe access to abortions so that women didn't have to go get the scare tactic of back alley abortions, which even then they were getting far less than anyone claimed they were. But now the court seems to be concerned more with pure access in any way, shape, or form, and essentially is condemning these women to getting back alley abortions in a clinic. And they're more concerned with making sure the clinic stays open than making sure that the clinic is actually providing safer medical care in all respects than a quote-unquote back-alley abortion.
The liberals are always talking about safe, legal abortions, and Bill Clinton even added the word rare, but I don't think anybody believes that anymore. But as far as so-called safe abortions that are legal, isn't it true that women sometimes die in so-called safe and legal abortions?
Yes. And even aside from the death question, abortion is not a safe procedure in any portion of the pregnancy.
Even in the first trimester?
Even in the first trimester, there are medical consequences to abruptly interrupting a natural process of the body. And so the medicine that is involved in order to terminate the pregnancy, whether it's the pill, whether it's a surgical abortion where they actually have to enter into the uterus to either cause the death of the baby or remove the baby from the body, all of these pose risks to women. There are the physical risks, but there are also the emotional and psychological risks. And then there's the continuing physical risks, even if the abortion itself is successful and there are no
immediate?
Nothing goes wrong in the actual process of the abortion. Okay. There are consequences later. Increased risk of breast cancer, increased risk of preterm birth in future pregnancies, increased risk of miscarriage in future pregnancies, increased risk of infertility. So abortion is not safe, period. But then when you add these these lack of requirements on these abortion clinics, you add to the complete lack of safety. For example, if your hallways aren't wide enough, this is not in Texas, but we knew of a clinic in Alabama, I believe it was, that was on the second floor of the building that it was in. The elevator, they had one elevator, and it was a small elevator, and it didn't work a lot of the time. So when they had anything go wrong in abortion, paramedics had to come up the stairwell. They could not fit a gurney through the stairwell, and even if they could, they couldn't fit it down the hallway. So they had to literally, physically carry the woman out of the building, down the stairs, in order to get her to the ambulance to take her to a hospital.
Wow.
So,
go ahead.
In no way does that sound safe.
Yeah. How often do women actually die from so-called safe and legal abortions?
I don't have the statistics handy on that.
I don't think anybody does. And I think
part of that is because
part of that's
not
the, they don't report
reported.
It that way. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Explain that. That's important.
A lot of the reporting techniques used, especially because of the fact that often women who die from an abortion aren't transported directly from the clinic. They go home, they have uncontrolled bleeding, they go to an emergency room, they do not tell the emergency room doctor they just had an abortion. So there are times where the death certificate lists something else because the physician treating them at time of death honestly doesn't know they had an abortion. But even when they do know it, they often list the cause of death as something else, such as uncontrolled bleeding or stroke or whatever they can label it to, and they don't tie it to the abortion. You know, just for example, like a lot of terminal diseases, you don't actually die from the disease itself. You die because you get pneumonia, and your body can't handle the pneumonia because it's already weakened from Lou Gehrig's disease or cancer or quadriplegia. So you don't actually die from the original disease. You die from pneumonia, but pneumonia would not have killed you if you did not have that original disease. So the same thing is true in these abortion situations. You have women who go in and die of whatever they put on the death certificate, but that never would have happened if they had not first had the abortion.
And it happens. I mean, it happens, there's probably at least a couple dozen a year throughout the country. And I'm making that number up, so I don't know for sure what the exact number is. So, I will retract that because I don't know the exact number, but it does happen. And there are sightings that, for example, peaceful pro-life protesters in front of clinics or whatever, they'll see the ambulance come, they'll see it rush to the hospital, and then they'll find out later that patient died because of the abortion. It happens. So we're talking right now with Jocelyn Floyd of Thomas More Society. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we're talking about the reaction to the Supreme Court decision, Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. The decision itself was 5-3. I suppose, I'm sure if Scalia were alive, the decision would have been 5-4. Anthony Kennedy, of course, has turned out to be a huge disappointment when it comes to abortion and also same-sex marriage. But any comment about Anthony Kennedy, a Reagan appointee, no less?
Yeah, well, I do also want to comment on your point that it would have been 5-4. Absolutely, Scalia would have been on this particular decision on the dissenting side. However, I have heard, this is not fact, I don't have official sources, this is just theory that attorneys talk about. There are some people who believe that Scalia is the one who had the most influence on Justice Kennedy when it came to these cases where Kennedy was the swing vote. So had Scalia not passed away, it would have been 5-4, period. But the question is, would it have been 5-4 with this makeup of the five, or would Kennedy have been swayed by Scalia's arguments to join the conservative side and uphold the law?
I don't know. To be frank with you, Kennedy has been very disappointing on abortion and on homosexual issues consistently, I'd say, since the Casey decision, 1992.
Yeah, well, someone told me once that Kennedy has never met an abortion restriction he did not like. The only abortion restriction he has struck down was the one that required spousal notification. Everything else he's found a way to uphold. So that's the other disappointing fact, is that Justice Breyer wrote the opinion. I think if Kennedy had written it, it would have been a slightly narrower opinion in what it stated as the rule going forward for legislatures to have to follow.
All right, let me ask you this. We hear about the phrase, the war on women. Is there a bit of irony here in terms of the Supreme Court's decision in the war on women? What's more important, access to abortion or safety for women?
I think there's irony in that, in the entire abortion discussion. We are growing in the amount of physical and medical evidence that we have with the harms that abortion causes to women, even in an abortion where absolutely nothing goes wrong. It's 100% successful, standard, routine. It harms the woman. And that is not information that the left wants to get out there, and they actively try to suppress that. And when we do bring it up, they try to say that our sources are biased or there was a mistake in that study. So in the entire context of abortion, you have the pro-life side saying, we care about the baby and the woman. We have pregnancy resource centers. We will help support you throughout the pregnancy and after your baby is born. Mm-hmm. We will help facilitate the adoption if you choose that. We will help you keep the baby if you choose that. We will help you get diapers and formula and clothes for your baby and
medical
job
help.
Training and resume training and finish your degree. All of that is pro-woman. The left and the liberal side, their pro-woman is 100%, you can do whatever you want when it comes sexually, and we will make sure that you have the right to avoid the consequences of that. That is their only weapon that they claim is pro-woman. And from my perspective, that's hugely harmful to women in the entire sense of that policy, but especially in the context of the harm that abortion actually causes.
And let's add one other factor, too. The left is always saying, follow the money. Okay, follow the money. I mean, if you were to take money out of the abortion debate, honestly, much of it would just collapse because the other side is committed to making money. And there's a lot of money to be made. Now, you said a moment ago, you mentioned breast cancer risks. Now, boy, the left goes all the way out, you know, to try and discredit any kind of link like that. And I understand that even in the American medical journals and so forth, you're not going to find any link mentioned. But there are links mentioned, let's say, in British journals where they don't necessarily have the same axe to grind. Comment about breast cancer.
Yeah, and that goes back to the politics. When you're looking at American journals and things like that, these are not unbiased sources. There is definitely a political influence in these medical associations, in the studies they do, in the publications. We see it in the American Pediatrics Association, I think, when it came to the influence of gay couples raising children, and the association ignored the word of many, many of its members and declared a policy saying this is perfectly fine. And so some of the pediatricians just left and created their own association.
Mm.
So when it comes to breast cancer, the fact that it's not brought up in these journals is not proof that it doesn't exist. It proves the power of the political force that is keeping it from being brought up. And I don't know, when you look at Europe and their abortion rights, They're much more conservative than American law. And we are one of the most liberal. We're in line with places like China and North Korea. I mean, these are not the countries we want to be associated with when it comes to human rights and safety. But speaking of China, there have been some more recent studies comparing breast cancer incidence in Chinese women pre-one-child policy and post-one-child policy.
Ooh.
So before that, you had very low incidence of breast cancer and no abortion. I mean, that wasn't something that happened. And then it has jumped. I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but
that,
it has jumped.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Hugely. And the rest of the control factors, the other influences that you might want to say, well, this could have been part of the cause, have remained stable. So just the population of China is in some ways the perfect sample for this type of study.
Excellent.
Because you can see exactly when the abortion rates jumped, and nothing else had a large shift at around the same time.
Sure.
And so...
So that isolated that factor. We're out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us. ThomasMoreSociety.org for more information. Again, Jocelyn Floyd. God bless and all the best.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.